Now it's time for Legal Talk, and today we welcome back specialist rental property attorney Marlon Chevalier, who's director of Marlon Chevalier and Associates Incorporated, standing by to chat to us about the ongoing difficulties around tenants who can't meet their rental obligations, around misuse of deposits, around what the regulations allow and don't allow, around evictions and more. You are very welcome to call in or WhatsApp us or send an SMS with your question. Just a reminder, as always, that the advice Marlon shares on air is intended as general legal guidance, and your particular question obviously has its own quirks and merits which he doesn't necessarily know about. So if you are in a quandary, it is a good idea to seek specialist help if you have a particularly tricky situation. Also, just a reminder, Marlon is a specialist in residential rentals, so we prefer to keep the focus on those, please. Marlon, great to have you back with us again. Are you still as frantically busy helping people whose leases have been impacted by lockdown? Good afternoon.
Hi, Pippa. Great to be back. Yeah, even though we've got tenants who've obviously gone back to work, we've still got the residual outstanding debt, which seems to hover above them. And it's something, unfortunately, that just, even though they are earning income now, that to catch up on the rear rental is becoming very, very difficult.
Okay, so that's obviously one of the things that we're going to be chatting about today. As a matter of interest, besides unpaid rent or as you said, that residual debt hanging over their heads, what are the other most common queries you're dealing with at the moment?
Well, we've got a lot of landlords who haven't been able to obtain some sort of relief for their bonds or for just earning income in order to look after themselves, and they've become quite desperate. Some have taken the law into their own hands, which means we've been able to come along and represent tenants in taking on these landlords, ironically. And then you've got certain landlords who've been fantastic and given relief to their tenants, and those tenants have taken the income that they would have paid for rental and squandered it elsewhere. So the main thing that we've seen, however, is a lot of landlords are struggling because for some reason or another, the rental income is the main source of gearing. It's the main source of servicing their bonds. And they are fearful that banks are going to foreclose on their properties and take their properties away. So I'm getting probably more complaints from landlords than I am from tenants at the moment.
Interesting. Okay. All right. Well, the questions are coming in thick and fast, so let's get straight to it, Marlon. And I'm going to start with a very interesting one from Brent, who wants to ask about not the landlord-tenant relationship, but the relationship with the rental agent. Brent's mom is the owner of a property here in Cape Town, which has tenants in it, and they have been desperately affected by lockdown to the point that they've been unable to pay her the full amount. They've been paying a little bit that they can afford every month, but it doesn't go very far. The position she's in is that the letting agent is still taking their full commission every month, and it's effectively taking the entire amount that is being paid in rental is being paid straight over in commission. And the agent is not willing to negotiate on that. Marlon, the agent found the tenant, so yes, they're entitled to commission for that, but are they eligible for full commission if full rental isn't being paid, or would that depend on the nature of the contract?
Look, usually it would depend on the nature of the contract, but 99 out of 100 contracts mandates between the rental agent and the landlord specifies that they would earn a percentage of the monthly rental. So it would be approximately 10% in the Western Cape. And therefore, if the rental is reduced, the commission by logic would reduce commensurate with the reduction in rental. I just want to point out that if they procured the tenant, in other words, they found the tenant for the landlord, that would ordinarily be a once-off fee, which is based on a percentage of the entire lease period. If, however, it's a management lease, you would then take your 10% or whatever that amount is every single month. But you cannot possibly take the entire commission if the rental is not being paid in full. That would be in excess of 10% if you look at it logically. Yeah. It could be 20%, it could be 30%. And for me, that would fall foul of the Consumer Protection Act because, of course, a rental agent is a supplier of services and the landlord is a recipient of those services and is a consumer. So that landlord would certainly have a claim against that rental agent for that particular purpose.
Thank you very much. Okay, Brent, that's good news, I think, for your mom. Perhaps you'd like to play her the podcast to help advise her on a way forward with that particular negotiation. This one, I'm pretty sure, is outside of what the law allows based on what you've told us before, Marlon. Gordon finds himself unable to pay his rent due to his changed financial circumstances, and he's been given 1 month's notice by his landlord. But he says the landlord is keeping the deposit to make up for the short payment, which leaves me unable to pay a deposit to procure a new place to live. That's not legal, is it, Marlon?
you know, look, the deposit can't be touched during the course of the lease. Obviously, once the lease has expired and you do an outgoing inspection just before the lease expires and there are damages to the property, to the actual physical damage or hypothetically arrear rental, then you can use that deposit. But to use the deposit whilst the lease is still alive is actually unlawful because it falls foul of the Rental Housing Act. It's also unfortunate because whilst I appreciate that the landlord might be out of pocket, similarly, you've got a tenant who may need that deposit in order to procure new premises and to pay a deposit there. And if he doesn't do that, he may not have the premises secured with the new landlord. So it's a very difficult situation. I get why landlords do this. But again, until the Rental Housing Act is different or the regulations say different, it can't be used during the course of the lease while the lease is still alive.
Thanks for that. Okay. Gosh, Pat is in the same predicament. A lot of parents of students are in reassessing student accommodation because the student year has been so drastically affected. Pat would like to know what the legal notice period is when terminating a lease early. She says, my son is a student at UCT and will not go back to campus this year. He spent a total of 6 weeks in his flat before he had to come home for lockdown in March. We've continued to pay rent on time every month, even though he's been home with us, but the lease was supposed to run until the 31st of December. Is Pat allowed to exit that lease early given that he is not going to have a need to use that property?
Well, the Consumer Protection Act in Section 14 is very clear and it entitles any natural person in a fixed-term lease such as this one until end of December to give 20 business days notice to terminate the lease. There needs not be any reason given. The only downside is that the particular company or this institution in this instance is entitled to hold that particular tenant liable for a reasonable cancellation penalty. Now, if it's just a normal residential property, Pippa, in essence, the landlord or the rental agent should be able, if they've got a list of potential tenants, go ahead and find another tenant to what we call mitigate the landlord's loss, to find another tenant to take over the remainder of the lease. Mm-hmm. The problem, however, in this particular instance, and I've seen it a lot with student accommodation, is that if the student is not going to go back to UCT, it's probable that UCT might not be able to find another tenant. So a reasonable cancellation penalty might not just be 1 month or 2 months. It could end up being the entire semester. Mm. Because how does UCT find another student to take over a 4 or 5 month lease? So that's where the problem is. And that makes it somewhat different to a normal residential lease termination. The right to terminate is there, but the potential penalty could be far greater.
Okay, thanks for that. Let's maybe pause from the questions for a minute, Marlon, and just talk a little bit about the options that are there for a landlord who's in this position of having a tenant who has defaulted on their rental. And we know there are very valid reasons why many people find themselves in that position right now. But as you said at the start, it's not like the landlords can necessarily afford to carry that risk. Many of them are trying to meet tenants halfway. Many of them are negotiating in good faith to get a lower rental rate and to keep the relationship with a tenant. The way landlords respond to the situation now, Marlon, obviously impacts the long-term relationship with that tenant. And maybe just a word of caution. I mean, you don't want to necessarily lose somebody who until now has been a good tenant who through no fault of their own is now without an income, unable to pay at least for the time being, particularly if there's a possibility that that person might be able to get back on their feet once their business reopens. I mean, just talk to us a little bit about the sort of the long-term ramifications here. It's not as simple as saying give notice and find a new tenant.
Yes, you know, the bottom line is that I've seen some wonderful landlords out there who have met tenants in the middle. I've seen the whole range on the whole entire spectrum. But ultimately, the landlord's got a few choices. Of course, the landlord can always negotiate to try and allow the tenant some sort of deferment or give the tenant an option to pay over a period of time or to extend the lease by the extra couple of months that the tenant is given a reprieve for. But ultimately, the choice comes down to, do I want to keep this lease alive or do I want to cancel it? And if a landlord wants to keep the lease alive because he is alive to the fact that it's not the tenant he doesn't want to pay, it's circumstance, and ultimately he doesn't want to end the lease because he's got to go then find another tenant, which comes at another cost and potentially a procurement for an agent, he can simply say, look, I need the money, and if you can't pay, I'm going to sue you for the money. And that is what we call specific performance. He basically says to the tenant, I need my money. I have to pay my bond. I've got to live. I'm going to sue you for the money. So he keeps the lease alive, and as the lease carries on, the court action carries on simultaneously. So he sues for a month or 2 months. ultimately, if he gets a judgment, he has every right to go ahead and send the local sheriff around to attach the gentleman's or the female's movables. And that is one of the ways of dealing with it. The other way of dealing with it is saying, listen, you haven't paid. If you don't pay, I'm going to cancel. And that's when you do this infamous 20 business day letter of demand, where you say to the tenant, if you have not paid your rental within 20 business days, I'm going to cancel. And that takes it on a completely different trajectory, because then the lease ends. Once the lease ends, that tenant is no longer a tenant, he's an unlawful occupier, and you then have the right to go ahead and evict. So you've got to ask yourself, what do I want from this tenant? Do I want my money, or do I want them out, and do I want to find a new tenant? And once you make that election, you're basically stuck to it, because once you cancel the lease is over. If you sue for the money owing, you can still at a later stage cancel. But canceling a lease because you've got a non-paying tenant leads you to a very simple deduction. What am I going to do if I can't find another tenant? Mm. If I find another tenant and look for it and pay more commission, it's basically nothing short of an economic question of opportunity cost. But the landlord does have options. You might find landlords that are very liquid and they will not tolerate a non-paying tenant. Or you find others saying, listen, I don't want to cancel your lease. I want you to pay. Please pay me so I don't have to sue you. Or you can just decide not to sue or not to cancel, but rather to negotiate. So there's many ways to skin a cat. It all, I suppose, depends on the nature of the relationship with the tenant, why they haven't paid. We have many situations where people haven't paid for months before COVID was even a sparkle in someone's eye. It's just, unfortunately, the economy that we're living in.
Okay, very, very difficult circumstances and very unusual ones, Marlon, as you say. And it's a case of identifying whether this is somebody who is genuinely in need because of COVID-19 or somebody who's trying to take advantage of a situation that's been created by COVID-19, in which case I would guess they're not the tenant you want in there long term. So Jenny has WhatsApped us from Sunningdale in response to the comment about using the deposit to pay the to claim back some of the unpaid rent. She says, I'm a pensioner. My only income is the rental I receive on a small property, and my tenant has not been able to pay rent since March. She's agreed that I should use the deposit until she can catch up on the arrears. Are you saying that this is unlawful?
Yes, it's unlawful. The reason why I say it's unlawful is because Section 5 of the Rental Housing Act clearly says that the deposit must be invested in the interest-bearing account. Nothing in the Rental Housing Act allows you to actually use the deposit during the lease period. There are some people who have used, but even taking it to its extreme, let's assume, and I don't believe this is the way, and I'll argue till the cows come home, that you can't use the deposits, but let's assume that you use the deposit because the tenant hasn't paid since March. Then the security deposit is gone. If it damages to the property, you've got no security to use it to fix up the property. And more importantly, what if another month kicks in with no rental? Again, you've got nothing to secure yourself. So the Rental Housing Act is very clear what the deposit is for. It's very clear it can only be used upon the expiration of the lease. Once you've done an ongoing inspection, you've looked at the damages, you looked at what the arrears are. And it also clearly says in the Rental Housing Act that you cannot use a deposit. You can't vary the terms of the Rental Housing Act, even if the parties agree to it amongst themselves. So you can't agree to contract out of the Rental Housing Act.
Very important. The one thing we haven't spoken about yet, Marlon, is if you have exhausted all options, you have a tenant who will not pay, you don't believe they're ever going to pay, whatever the reason may be, and you want them out so that you can get a paying tenant in. What is the current status around evictions? You can start eviction proceedings, but not actually evict somebody under lockdown. Is that correct?
Correct. I mean, the courts, unfortunately, have no consistency at the moment, but where we are finding pretty much some logic is that they would allow eviction papers to be issued, but they will suspend the carrying out of that order until the effect of lockdown period ends. So presumably until the end of level 3. So that's where we are. So it's sort of getting your papers issued, which shows the tenants that we are meaning business, the unlawful occupiers, that we are intending to get them out, but the suspension of the actual order being carried out. So that's where we are at the moment. So you can start the eviction process, just can't get your eviction order at this particular point in time.
Okay. Well, here's a personal experience from Terence, who I know from previous shows has had a long, long journey with an eviction attempt. And he says, once you evict, it takes 1 to 2 years to get an eviction. It cost us 120,000 Rand, 5,000 Rand per month times 24 in their experience. And Terence's comment is he found the process unfair and feels landlords have very few rights in the process. Would you agree with him, Marlon?
I disagree as to the cost and the length of time. I mean, we've done up to 30 evictions a month over a number of years. And firstly, the cost is astronomical. But then again, I speak under correction because it might have been opposed. There might have been a whole lot of what we call interlocutory applications. I don't know the nature of it. So the cost and the length is exorbitant to me, but that's without seeing the true nature of the matter. What I do agree with is that it is unfair to landlords, because ultimately you can find very opportunistic tenants who can use the law to delay things inevitably. So it's a rough process and it does take time. That's why it helps you to have an attorney that is well-versed in eviction law and who is able to, I suppose, deal with the tenants. Because what people don't realize is that a court order which is granted, an eviction order which is obtained by arguing in court, is a little bit different to getting an agreement signed and made an order of court, because an agreement actually cannot be appealed, whereas a court order, especially in the magistrate's court, can automatically be appealed, which can kick another 6 or 7 months onto the time period for the matter to be heard. So there are a lot of factors you need to look at, but to say basically 2 years and 120,000 rand, I suppose it would be remiss of me to say that, but I can tell you I've never seen an eviction take that long or cost that much in my practice.
Okay, I think he's doing the sums based on the rental that's been lost in that period, if I'm reading it correctly.
No, that's a different story. Well, of course, that wouldn't be lost rental. That would be damages, because, of course, there's no lease agreement in place once it's cancelled. So, effectively, it's loss of rental income, so to speak. That, of course, would be logical. Over 4 or 5 months, that could be astronomical.
Yeah. Okay, here's a very interesting question from Anonymous, saying, I suspect my tenant is allowing visitors onto my property again. It's obviously their decision about their personal safety with regard to COVID-19, but do I bear any liability for the safety of their guests while visiting?
Ultimately, a landlord would bear liability if the property is not safe for its purpose which it was intended. But if the tenant is choosing to bring his or her own visitors on without the consent of the landlord, then I fail to see any liability attaching to the landlord in that event. So only if the landlord doesn't provide the property in a structural condition which benefits the tenant, that could attach liability. But not if the tenant of his own accord is not just breaking COVID-19 regulations, but he's taking his life effectively into his own hands. I don't see any liability, and I think it'll be hard-pressed to claim liability from the landlord in that event.
While we talk about liability, if, for example, you rented out a property that had a swimming pool, but the swimming pool didn't have a cover or any kind of security on it, is that something that a landlord could be held liable for if a visitor to the property, God forbid, was to fall into the pool and drown?
Very much so. But unfortunately, you need to look as well as what are the duties of the guardian or the parent with that child. So there would be potentially an apportionment of liability if it can be shown that that parent was negligent. So not just a straight liability. If a pool cover is specified in the lease agreement to be provided and it isn't, then it could be the liability of the landlord. But if it is provided and hypothetically the tenant doesn't put it on properly, then it wouldn't be the landlord's liability. So it must be done on a factual basis.
Okay, fair enough. I think we can squeeze in very quickly a call from CJ in Gardens. Good afternoon, CJ.
Good afternoon to you, Pippa, and the gentleman. As I said to your gentleman that answered, my grandson, his mom died under 1.5 years ago, and her son, my grandson, if in the trust is the house for him. About 3 months after she passed, he felt sorry for a lady with 3 children, but the ages, the boy was 21 already, the girl 20, and the youngest one 9, and the mother's 48. And the trust tried long before Christmas, December, to get them out, and every single time they got a letter or a warning, she just said, no, well, this, that, and the other. Goes opposite. Anyway, I think she's quite a professional at what she does. It is with the lawyers now, and they've managed finally an eviction order. But on the strength of what that gentleman just said just now about an eviction order, this is a good lawyer. I don't want to do any names, and they are working on it, but they said the courts are very slow. That's why it took them 3 weeks now to get the eviction order because of skeleton staff. And, well, my grandson is still waiting, Shame. He paid a lot of money to stay somewhere else in someone else's home while they took over his house over the lockdown because they came and went as they pleased.
Terrible situation to be in, Marlon, but at least they've got as far as getting an eviction order. But just to repeat again, nobody will be able to act on that for as long as we are under lockdown. Is that correct?
Absolutely. I mean, and even when we come out of lockdown, you must understand there's going to be a tremendous backlog. I mean, we're sitting with evictions, but we can't carry them out. And you can imagine once we resume to full capacity at our courts, they're going to be working overtime. I don't pity them.
Oh dear, that is the point at which the phone line finally collapses, I'm afraid. Marlon, if you can still hear us, our thanks as always for your invaluable expertise and sharing thereof on this show. It is always greatly appreciated. You've been listening there to Marlon Chevalier of Marlon Chevalier and Associates Incorporated. CJ, I really feel for your grandson, and I hope that the process will move once it is allowed to move. As Marlon's just said, nobody can be physically evicted during lockdown, and do expect that there's going to be a backlog in the courts once that possibility is reinstated at the end of lockdown, because everybody who's obtained an eviction order during lockdown is then going to want it to be processed. So unfortunately, you should warn him to anticipate a fairly slow movement back towards a resolution once it's all over.